நீங்கள் SBS தமிழோடு இணைந்துள்ளீர்கள்.
Greetings, Shankara Chandran.
Greetings, Sanjana. Thank you for having me today.
It's been a few months since we last spoke when you won the Miles Franklin Award. You seem to be writing at a pace much faster than I can cope with reading.
Well, you're a very fast reader. I am doing my best, though. I'm trying to write as much as I can.
There are two books out now, one in audio form, The Unfinished Business, and the other, Safe Haven, in print form. Congratulations on both of them.
Thank you so much, and thank you for reading my work, because I know there's plenty of other things you could be reading.
The pleasure is all mine, Shankari. May I ask what prompted you to write on these topics?
Safe Haven, which is the novel that's come out in print form this month, is a love story and a murder mystery set on an offshore detention center. And at the heart of the novel is an asylum seeker who's faced with deportation, a community that rises to protect her, and a special investigator who uncovers secrets that could divide a nation. So it's about displacement and seeking refuge, but also about finding home and the lengths that you'll go to find safety and love. And these are themes that are very important to me, I think to all of us. And I was particularly inspired by the story of Priya and Nadesh Murugappan, or the Bilawila family as they're often known, and their resilience and their fight to stay in their new home, Australia, and their community's campaign to bring them home to Bilawila. Although my fictional plot in Safe Haven differs significantly from the terrible injustices that they faced. In addition to that, I was particularly moved by the story of Para Pahir, who you have covered on SBS Radio. This was an asylum seeker who fled Sri Lanka. He was rescued from a sinking boat by a Norwegian tanker and then detained on Christmas Island. And he became friends, and in fact, he became family with Ali Cork, who I call Auntie Ali. And she is a teacher in Apollo Bay, Victoria, and she became his pen pal and his Australian mum. And with support from Ali and the Rural Australians for Refugees, this great organisation, he was released and he became a citizen and was reunited with his family. And so I loved these two stories of adversity were also stories of incredible community contribution and the challenges that were faced by these asylum seekers. They didn't face them alone. And I wanted to really elevate that community response as well as the struggles faced by refugees and the injustices of our own detention system.
Power of good people, I presume.
That's it. You're quite right. It is the power of good people that is driving this. And I think it's worth writing a story about it. We often sort of dwell in the misery of life and we forget the power of good people.
Do you think that it's worth getting the policymakers and people in power to read this story, Safe Haven?
I think that there are incredible legal organizations and human rights organizations that are doing enormous advocacy on this issue. And there are cases being played out in the High Court right now, and the question of whether or not the government has the right to indefinitely detain, it is actually being clarified and litigated. And I think it's the hard work of asylum seekers bringing their actions and self-advocating. It's lawyers and human rights organisations and people like Ali Cork and, you know, Rural Australians for Refugees advocating for refugees that will create change. I think what literature and storytelling does in the space of literature, because we're all engaged in a form of storytelling, I think literature is its own powerful form of storytelling that adds value and supports the efforts of those people. And it's not that this book will make policymakers change their minds. I think this book may give readers insight and deepen their empathy for the conditions faced by people and will remind them that it's possible for us to be better than we are right now. And that we've demonstrated that time and time again. Australian communities have demonstrated that they are better than our politicians. But I think that the legal and policy changes will happen at the coalface of that through the work of asylum seekers themselves and the work of lawyers and organisations that represent them.
The other book that is only available in audio form for now, The Unfinished Business, deals with the political situation in Sri Lanka and the uprising that happened against the government. Were you there when the uprising happened? The reason why I'm asking this is if you were not there, how did you go about navigating through all the scenarios that you have beautifully woven in this story?
So I would consider that the uprising and the secession of Tamil rights and the Tamil struggle went on for 26 years. And then its aftermath continues. And my story, Unfinished Business, which is currently in audible form but will be in print form at the end of the year, focuses on 2009, so the very height of the Civil War and its end. In particular, it takes a moment or an incident, which is the assassination of a journalist on the streets of Colombo, to explore the role of foreign countries, rising superpowers, aging superpowers, their role through intervention and through non-intervention in that war, and in particular in its final stages. But the story uses the sort of model of a political thriller to do that. And so it begins with the assassination of a journalist on the streets of Colombo. No one knows who did it or why. Was it the Sri Lankan government? Was it the Chinese government? A secret agent from the CIA is sent back to Sri Lanka. Her name is Ellie Harper, and she's part Sri Lankan and part white. And so she moves between all of these worlds very easily. And she is sent back to Sri Lanka after a mission that had failed 4 years before. And she is there to investigate what happened to the journalist. And in doing so, she goes on her own redemption journey, and she has to work with the people that she let down in the past. And she uncovers the conspiracies of other countries in Sri Lanka, and where these countries choose to play God with the lives of innocent people.
There are some commonalities in both the stories. You are a lawyer by training, but you cover a lot of medical issues that are either caused by other humans or accidents, and then you go into minute details. I wonder where you gather all that information from. What's your process, Shankari?
So I'm very fortunate in that I have family and friends who are often subject matter experts or have access to subject matter experts. So I have a network through my own family to an amputation clinic in Sri Lanka in the north. And then I have access to a number of human rights organizations. And in fact, most people that are better researchers than me will be able to find the information as well, because there are so many databases now online set up by human rights organizations where they publish their human rights reports. The UN publishes reports, Human Rights Watch, Public Interest Advocacy Center, and so on. And so you're able to access those. I was very fortunate that I have done several research trips to Sri Lanka, and people feel comfortable. I think they know my family and they know what I'm doing with my work. And so when I go into the northern region, people are comfortable to talk to me, which is a great privilege to receive the lived experiences of others, particularly where those lived experiences have been so traumatic, but that they are so keen to share that with you so that that will form part of your storytelling, because they want that truth to be told. And in Sri Lanka, it is very difficult to tell the truth about what happened during and after the war. And so I was able to speak to a lot of survivors, and was also able to speak to doctors who were there in the final stages of the war. I was able to speak to former UN employees and journalists, activists, lawyers, and policymakers, and with that had great insight into what happened at that time. And so you'll see, I think in both, actually, my acknowledgements in both the Unfinished Business and in Safe Haven, I thank them collectively, but not individually, because for many of them, they don't want to be known because it's not safe for them to be known.
In our interview after your first book, Song of the Sun God, you mentioned that you found it very difficult to find a publisher in Australia, but now publishers seem to be lining up. Has there been a big change since you won the Miles Franklin Award?
I'm with Ultimo Press, who published Chai Time at Cinnamon Gardens and had the courage to take that novel on, because it is a novel that criticizes aspects of the Australian identity and culture. And the publication of that novel, even before the outcome of the award, it really consolidated our partnership and creative collaboration. And so I'm most likely to publish all of my books with Ultimo Press for as long as they will have me, because I think they really understand who I am as a writer and what I'm trying to do and what I'm trying to say with my work. So I'm very fortunate to be in that position, to have a publisher that backs me and a publisher that trusts me and that I trust, because you have to give them your work and then improve the quality of that work together. And so I feel fortunate to have a partner in my creative life, which is something I've never had before.
All your books, from Song of the Sun God, Barrier, Chai Times at Cinnamon Gardens, Unfinished Business, and the one in hand, Safe Haven, all have underlying themes from the island of Sri Lanka. Are you going to continue along the same lines in the future, or can we expect to see you expand?
It's an interesting question, isn't it? I'll give you the honest answer. I've got an idea for my next novel, and I think that I'm actually going to base the family in London, just because I have not been to London for a while, and it's one of my favorite cities in the world. I spent a lot of time there and met my husband and had three children and a wonderful career in justice there. And so I have a lot of affection for the city, and I'm quite inclined to set my next novel in that city. I think that when you look at the protagonists that are put forward by writers, anyone from Jane Austen to Jane Harper, Michael Robotham to George Orwell, no one ever asked them, will you write about people other than white people from the social milieu that you are familiar with? And it always intrigues me that I do get that question. And there is a part of me that will absolutely like to embrace the approach of authors like Elizabeth Gilbert, who, for example, writes predominantly about women, women from different countries, always white women, but different countries, different eras, and different social classes. And she is a profound and prolific and incredibly talented, hardworking writer. And I admire her versatility. And that is something that I will challenge myself with as my career develops. At the same time, there are issues and people that I am particularly more interested in than other people and issues, which other authors explore to their heart's content. And so I may well stay within the space of Tamil families and the Tamil struggle and the Sri Lankan geopolitical region, including its diaspora, or I may not.
I don't know the intent of the others who asked you the question, but the reason why I asked that question is, even though you have Tamil heritage, Tamil background, Tamil ethnicity, and so on, you have never lived in the island of Sri Lanka, yet you write about that island and the people with so much precision and detail. That is what made me ask that question.
Yeah, no, well, thank you. You're quite right. I was born in London, raised in Australia, and I've been to Sri Lanka for trips to visit family, and I've been for many trips to do research for my novels. Sri Lanka is alive in my mind because I've received, not just because of a huge amount of research, but because I have received decades of memories from my family, immediate, extended, and community. And so I've grown up listening to the stories of the island of Sri Lanka and feel like I have as deep a connection with it as I could have, having not been born or raised there, and try very hard to honour it and to create a sense of it for my own children, and in particular for subsequent generations of the diaspora who may never have that connection to Jaffna or the island that our parents did. And at the same time, the wonderful thing about creativity is that you never know where it will take you. And so I look forward to, you know, being surprised by the blank page.
All your recent novels have also woven stories or ideas from the First Nations people of Australia. The next one you mentioned is based in London. Will that also involve First Nations people?
I don't think so. I think it will inevitably, it's very hard to write. If you can imagine a Venn diagram of any one of any Tamil stories crossed over with London, it is very difficult not to speak to the colonial story. I think often the mistake we can make, and it's very understandable that we do this, because it's impossible to carry the past with you every day. And it's really only historians and political scientists that necessarily have that deeper awareness of it. But I would challenge you to walk anywhere in London and not see a reminder of its colonial history. And that colonial history is something that we in Australia and we on the island of Sri Lanka share with each other and share with many countries and many communities around the world, whether it be Britain as the colonizer or a different power, because all of us are either the colonizer or the colonized. And so there will always be, I think, a thread of that in my stories, because it is a thread that runs through the lived experience of all people.
I agree that we don't carry our past with us every day, but your words, your writings bring back a lot of memories from the past, whether you're Australian born or you were born in another country and you migrated here. Shankari, we always enjoyed a conversation with you. Thank you for that. And I hope you continue to write and delight us. On behalf of SBS Tamil, we wish you all the very best for all your future endeavors.
Thank you so much, Sanjana. Thank you for your support. I really appreciate it.
விருப்பம் பகிர்வு கருத்து பதிவு லைக் ஷேர் காமெண்ட் SBS தமிழின் Facebook.